When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Tom Hopkinson of the Sunday Mirror and Adrian Clark of PremierLeague.com. There's no shame in falling down. True shame is in not getting back up. An old Japanese saying, apparently. It's certainly relevant to Chelsea. Their unbeaten record ended at Spurs. Now they go to the champions, Leicester. Just a blip, Tom?
We'll know about 7:30 on Saturday night, won't we? You would have to say it was a blip, but as you say, what they have to do, what Antonio Conte has to do, is make sure that they get back up and they get back on the charge. I mean, it was an incredible run of form Chelsea found themselves on, and you could say that Peterborough was a great game for them to come back after that slip-up against Tottenham. I mean, Tottenham, we say it's a blip or a slip-up, Tottenham were superb and absolutely deserved their win, but I think watching the game, I just got the feeling that Chelsea had run out of energy almost. There was a bit of fatigue given the hectic schedule over Christmas and New Year. Not just physically, though, mentally as well. And I think they'll have had a little bit of time off, or they will have time off over the next few days to recharge the batteries a bit. And as I say, it was only against Peterborough, that victory, and it was a changed team. But I think that will just have given them time to get going again. So I think Leicester's a very good game for them as well, because Leicester, you know, they had a good win at the weekend over Everton themselves, but they've not been firing anything like they were last season. So I think we'll see Chelsea back to winning ways.
Mm. Yeah, spotlight's going to be on Kante, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
He's a force of nature.
He is. Yeah, he was below par, wasn't he, at White Hart Lane? And I think that affected Chelsea quite a lot, actually.
In around about 15 miles this
yeah,
time.
Yeah, exactly. Look, Chelsea are like a machine this season. I really feel, in many ways, that they remind me of Leicester last season, in that they have their way of playing, they have their system, and it isn't about individuals, it's about players fitting in to the shape that the manager wants. And one player being out doesn't seem to disrupt Chelsea as much as certain other teams. So, yeah, in many respects, they remind me of Leicester last season. I slightly disagree with you on Leicester being a good game for them. I would say, obviously, based on their former season, Leicester have been very average in terms of champions. But what Tottenham did expose, I think, and we saw it to some degree, I think, at Sunderland, is that space behind the wing-backs, Alonso and Moses. If you can get into those areas, if you can penetrate, get in there and pull those three centre-backs apart, maybe isolate Azpilicueta as Dele Alli did so well in that game at White Hart Lane, then you can really get at Chelsea. And I think Leicester have got the pace down wide, in the wide areas, potentially. Depends if Musa starts. But if they play to their potential, I'm thinking Gray, Musa, down the sides, they can deliver the balls in. They could be in business.
You see, that's the absolute key, though, playing to potential. And they just haven't got anywhere near that potential for me this time. And I think what will be fascinating, now Kurt Zouma's back as well, is whether Conte looks at him. He's already identified him as the best defender at the club. Whether he thinks, after one game in the FA Cup against a League One opposition, whether he is ready physically, mentally to go in the heat of Premier League battle. And what will be fascinating is, if he brings him in, what happens to Victor Moses or Marcus Alonso? And you talk about them, because I can see Azpilicueta getting moved out from that defensive trio to either side.
See, I can also see Nathan Ake coming into this as well.
Excellent
at Bournemouth. If they're going to bring him back, he's got to play.
I was down there on Friday, and it was quite interesting. It was a question that was thrown in at the end of, literally, we're coming to the end of Antonio Conte's Sunday newspaper briefing. He'd already done about 40 minutes, and someone out of nowhere asked him, you know, Nathan Ake, and he was like, it was almost rabbit in headlights. He's like, oh, how do you know about that yet? I think we are going
to
look
into bringing him back. We need to be careful with Ake, because he's only really been red hot for, I'd say, 6 weeks or so. He wasn't in the Bournemouth team. There's a reason why he wasn't in the Bournemouth team initially. Obviously, Eddie Howe didn't see the potential he clearly has. He's been outstanding. Does he look up to Chelsea's standard? I think he does, to be perfectly honest. I like his attributes, I like his temperament, and I'm guessing Gary Cahill is the man maybe at most risk of losing his place out of those three.
What about John Terry? Have we seen the last of him looking up at a red card?
No, he'll get another game for sure between now and the end of the season. But look, we're in the dying embers of his time at Chelsea, no question about that. It's been a rotten run for him, hasn't it? I mean, he came in at a West Ham game in the EFL Cup into a back three. Was awful, if truth be told. And he comes in to the FA Cup and gets himself sent off. It was a terrible, terrible day for John Terry, with getting a red card and with Nathan Ake being recalled, because all of a sudden, for the first time in his career, he's probably like fifth or sixth choice Chelsea centre-half. I think we'll see him again, but his appearances are going to be very fleeting.
I love the idea of an appeal, by the way, because they're going to appeal. All right, he might get a frivolous extra game ban, but he's not going to play anyway, so it really doesn't matter.
Definite red card, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think
so. Ian McLeod asks us, who does Ake replace?
I think Azpilicueta has arguably been the most consistent defender in that back three this season. So I wouldn't move him. He had a poor game at Spurs. He was isolated a little bit. David Luiz has been excellent. I think he's integral to the way they build from the back in terms of passing out from the centre. So I'd have to say Gary Cahill. I think Nathan Ake is naturally left-sided as well, so he would slot in nicely on the left side of a back
three.
He does
give nice balances. And do you remember Gary Cahill? There was an interview came out after a game when he got given a tackle against him that was really harsh. I can't remember whether he got sent off, or people will know tweeting him, but he came out, didn't he, and he talked about the referee and about how the decisions that referees make, you know, these are people's livelihoods and careers. He was really emotional about it, and I love that, but I love to see him come out and speak that way. But what it did say to me is that was a man who, having seen David Luiz come in and knowing what was going on behind the scenes with Zuma working his way back from injury, knowing the likes of Ake were doing well, that was a man who did fear for his
place. But having that pressure has actually improved his performance level,
quite right.
We have to say that.
There's an interesting bit of a left field one from Kieran Dunn. What about putting Willian as a left wing back?
No, I don't see him as a left-sided wing-back. I see him potentially as a right-sided wing-back. I think he could do that job, no problem. I don't know whether the person who's messaged in isn't happy with Marcos Alonso. I think Alonso has added real balance to that team. I think that was really important.
And he's given Hazard far more freedom as well.
With Azpilicueta, as good as he is, he can play anyway. He's a really clever, intelligent footballer. But he has to slow the game down, check back onto his right foot. He can't offer what Alonso can, because he's a left-footer. I think Willian as a right wing-back, I think if he can't displace Pedro permanently in that spot behind the striker, then I think Willian, we might see him instead of Moses, who, let's be honest, hasn't been quite as good in recent weeks as he was when he first got into the side.
Albert O'Brien's on the wind-up. obviously, this weekend we've got the great tribal collision between Liverpool and Manchester United. He said, will Liverpool be able to cope if Jose parks the bus?
I think they will. I was up at Anfield for the Manchester City game. It was an incredible performance from Liverpool. Really good game. I know a lot of people were a bit disappointed by it, but I really enjoyed the tactics of both sides, and it was a real good old-fashioned slog. You know, not necessarily the high-scoring games that we see and we expect when you've got the likes of Klopp and Guardiola going against each other, but I think Klopp showed again that day that he is a real clever tactician when he wants to be and when he needs to be, and against Manchester United in the sort of form that they're in at the moment, he is going to need to be. I mean, Manchester United arguably are the most confident side in the Premier League at the moment.
Eight wins on the bounce.
Chelsea, let's say that Chelsea have lost, even if it's a slight percentage after the defeat at Tottenham. Tottenham themselves doing very well, but the way things are going for United at the moment, and because of such a poor start, they've almost been able to do it under the radar, so it's going to be a fascinating game.
I fancy United in this game. I do. I think it is a great collision between the two managers. Obviously, Jose Mourinho shut down Liverpool, didn't he, at Anfield. It was a pretty boring game, but he got his tactics spot on. And I think it'll be more expansive now because he's found a nice balance, actually, at Old Trafford. You've got to ask, why did it take Jose Mourinho so long to find the right balance in his team?
He's got too many players.
Yeah.
I think he'd say that himself. I think he had too many options.
But it's perfect now. I think Carrick's sitting there. You've got Herrera one side, Pogba the other. perfect. All of the Herrera's the busy presser. Pogba's allowed to go roaming, but he's better doing it from deep.
What about the balance further forward?
I like it. It's what it is. The grey areas have gone. Everybody knows Zlatan is going to play. End of. He's not even going to come off. Jose Mourinho does not mess around with Zlatan. He's there. And it's basically cleared things up for everybody else. Wan-Mata, Mkhitaryan, Rooney, Rashford, Martial. They know there's two spots up for grabs. And when they're given a chance, they have to deliver to keep their place. There's such competition for places in those wide forward areas now that I think it's raised the standards. There is no number 10, mm-hmm. and that has helped Manchester United.
I think Jordan Henderson is the key man in that game. You think back to the game at Chelsea when he scored that cracking goal, but he bossed the game as well. And I think if he can take control of that area just in front of Liverpool's defence, then that will be the problem.
He's been out, hasn't he? But I think Jurgen Klopp was talking about Jordan Henderson being back.
Should be fit.
He's been the main. If he was absent, I would say Manchester United clear favourite. But Henderson is so good, and he surprised me. Mm-hmm. I didn't think Henderson could be the defensive anchor in a side like Liverpool, especially with quite a fragile back four. But he's done a great job.
Yeah, Josh Grotchley asked, and I think I know what the answer to this question is. Would any of us start Wayne Rooney against Liverpool?
No, I wouldn't. I think I would be going with Mkhitaryan on the right and Martial on the left. I think those are the form guys. I know that Juan Mata's in the goals. Jesse Lingard, we haven't even mentioned him. He's a player that can deliver. I think those two at the moment are the form players for Manchester United, either side of Zlatan. Don't mess with the midfield. It's working. I can't see Jose Mourinho, unless there's injuries or an alarming dip in form, altering that midfield three. When you strike on something that clicks, Stick with it.
I think Mourinho is praying that Wayne Rooney scores against Hull in the League Cup. It just makes life. And not that Mourinho is the sort of manager who worries about, you know, he won't let emotion get in the way of his team selection. But if Rooney can get and break Sir Bobby Charlton's records against Hull, then it completely changes the narrative.
Is this a good time, Tom, to actually put into perspective Wayne Rooney's career?
So it's a very good time.
He's been fantastic, hasn't he?
He's been absolutely superb. You know, we've all got our favourite Wayne Rooney goal. I think back, the one that always springs to mind for me is that one against Newcastle when he was in the ref's ear having a right go at the referee and then all of a sudden noticed that the ball was coming over and lashed home the volley.
The overhead kick.
The City scissor kick as well was just a phenomenal goal, even though I think Joe Hart still claims it came off his shin. So there have been so many.
I love that one for Everton, you know, the one he announced himself with.
No, I don't like that. I didn't like that one.
Against Arsenal.
I remember watching him. I went with my mates to watch Euro 2004 and he was I think he might have been a teenager then. He's very young and he scored two goals in the game we went to watch against Switzerland in Coimbra. And it's just remarkable to think that at that point he was at the top level doing the business and he's still there. For me, it feels like almost two lifetimes ago that I was doing that. Yet he has been at the very highest level ever since. And I think that takes an awful lot of character and an ability to stay.
Alan Shearer was very interesting in the papers this morning talking about the fact that he advised Rooney to retire internationally because he didn't want to see him losing something because of losing any longevity yet he has the desire and the will he's shown to go on, and despite the criticism that comes his way
he's got more money than he'll ever spend. What impresses me about him is that, especially with England, he's there every time.
And look, I also think Wayne Rooney doesn't like the criticism that's been coming his way over the last couple of years. He's very sensitive towards that. Some of it is fair, I think. Some of it misplaced. Mm. But I think he's just got to accept that he isn't as good a player as he was a couple of years ago. He's probably, you know, we think about Teddy Sheringham, he's always the classic example, isn't he, of a player who got better in terms of the fact that the first yard of pace was always in his head, and he got better because he read the game better. And Rooney probably thinks to himself, well, I'm reading the game better, technically I'm better, but he has lost something because of that little
bit of pace. You have to fulfil a role for the team, and I think at the moment he's not one thing or the other. He's not a striker, he's not a number 10 because there isn't one, he's not a proper central midfielder yet. He needs to reinvent himself,
and that probably has been to his detriment over the years. He's probably been such a team player. But I think, look, you're absolutely right to answer your question. It is the perfect time to celebrate him because I think, you know, it's the same old story, isn't it? When he's gone, that's when people will really say what a player he actually was.
They're playing Hull in the League Cup tomorrow. A new manager there who's basically got the definition of mission impossible, isn't he? You know, Marco, he hasn't got a prayer there, has he?
Maybe not. I mean, Garth took a start in the FA Cup, didn't they? 2-0 win against Swansea in front of absolutely no one at the KCOM Stadium. The fans made their feelings pretty clear. What I don't like about this appointment is that everybody jumping on the bandwagon saying, who is he? Let's give English managers a chance. Bloody, bloody, blah. He doesn't deserve it. Give the guy a chance. Let's see how he fares. His background is okay. He did succeed to some degree.
He did well at Olympiacos.
Sporting Lisbon, he did all right until he refused to wear the club blazer and then got sacked. And he did well at Olympiacos. Okay, it's quite easy to win the league with Olympiacos, but it takes something. You have to have something about you to manage a club of that stature. So he's not a nobody, Marco Silva. Let's give him a chance. Has he got the players to survive in the Premier League? No. No chance.
It's a great opportunity for him as well, isn't it? You know, because he comes in with absolutely nothing to lose, to my mind.
Yeah,
you know,
if
all go down, well, you can blame the start to the season they've had. You can blame the lack of investment. You can blame everything that's been going on behind the scenes. Mm. He may become available to other clubs on the continent in the summer. And he's got Premier League experience on him. The one thing, actually, is that I really didn't like the fact that, and I know the fans have been through a lot up there, but to boycott an FA Cup game, it would have made much more of a statement if they'd boycotted a Premier League game. The FA Cup. But I don't know. Hull fans might tell me different on this, but I know a lot of clubs. You have to buy your FA Cup tickets on top of your season tickets. So it just seemed like such an easy option just not to turn up for that game. Now, don't do it at a big game. You know, don't turn up for Manchester United. Don't turn up for Liverpool. One of those, and that will really let the club know, and the Premier League as a whole know that you're not willing to accept. And they're right to be boycotting games, because I think some of the things that have been going on up there behind the scenes are terrible, and I would expect them, but just, you know, have the conviction to go and do it at a really big game.
Yeah. Wembley, though, you know, that prospect is obviously a fantastic draw. Southampton against Liverpool in the other semi-final. Mm. I think this is a season where Liverpool are going to win something.
Yeah.
Is it going to be the League Cup?
I think that's their best chance at the moment. You've got to fancy them over two legs against Southampton. They're in a rotten run of form, aren't they? Something's not quite right at Southampton.
Is it because, you know, the curse of the selling club is finally catching up with them? You know, Fonte wanting to leave.
In fact, Van Dijk has done so well that everybody is sniffing around him, and you wonder if he's had his head turned. I know he's been scoring goals. I think his performance levels, Van Dijk, have dropped off a little bit in recent weeks. The problem is the goals. I mean, if you get rid of top quality strikers, I mean, they had Pella, Mane, didn't they? They've had so many that they've lost. And the guys that they've got in situ just aren't really at the same level. We all like Charlie Austin's a good finisher, but he can't stay fit. Rodriguez has had similar problems, a talent, but scores 3-1 week and then you've got to go on a barren run. I think they need more quality going forward, Southampton. And they're just not playing well enough to threaten Liverpool in this tie. It's a Liverpool Man U final, no question.
And the neutrals will love that, won't they?
The neutrals will love it. I suspect the bigwigs at the EFL will love it as well. And look, come on, if it doesn't bother me as a non-supporter of any of those clubs who gets to the final, but if you've got another chance to see Mourinho against Klopp, another of these huge managerial battles, then I'm all for that.
Bring it on.
Max Bentley has been on. Question for you, I think, Adrian.
Okay, yeah.
Is this the year that Wenger finally fails to get Arsenal in the top four?
Who knows? I still believe that Arsenal will finish in the top four. They always do. I think Arsenal have got the best squad in the division. Nothing will change my mind on that. I think there are two excellent players for each position, and I don't think Arsene Wenger would swap his squad for any other. I genuinely don't. So, no, it's going to come down to their big game mentality and also a clean sheet mentality. And these are the two areas that Arsenal have struggled in under Arsene Wenger in recent years. They haven't been defensively resilient enough, and in the big games they haven't played at the same level. It's not every big game, but a lot of them. So it's going to boil down this season, not just for Arsenal but for all of the big six, down to the fixtures between them. And if you look at it right now, I would understand why Arsenal fans would think, we're good at beating the smaller teams, we're not so good in the big games, we could be in trouble here. Let's wait and see.
That's quite a claim, by the way. Arsenal the best of people falling off their office chairs at lunchtime. Particularly Chelsea fan. Well, Chelsea, I think Chelsea.
What, as a squad?
I think so, yeah.
No chance.
Yeah, I genuinely
Who's the backup to Costa?
Well, that's a very good point.
It could be Llorente.
Giroud and Alexis. At the moment, they've got five or six key men out. And you wouldn't really know.
I think that little area behind, I mean, it's easy just to go for one, the central striker's role. You're absolutely right. There's more options at Arsenal. But the trio behind them, I would pick the way Chelsea's big players, big names are performing, the Hazard, Would you have Sanchez over Hazard?
I would, yeah.
Would you?
Yeah.
No, I'm not sure I would this year at all.
But I'm talking about depth. I'm not saying first 11. I think Chelsea's first 11 is the best at the moment. They're streaking clear in the Premier League. Tottenham's first 11 is the equal of anyone's at the moment. Liverpool's is. Mm. But in terms of squad depth, I wouldn't swap Arsenal's for any other.
Tom, what do you think about the Ozil situation? You know, it's come out that he basically is looking at what Wenger is doing, which sounds a bit strange.
Well,
negotiating tactic
for
me.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're Arsene Wenger this morning, you've got the cigar on, haven't you? And you're absolutely overjoyed because it puts the Arsene out brigade in quite the quandary. I would imagine to a man they want Mesut Ozil to sign, but if it's only he gets to stay if we got to stick with Arsene Wenger as well, what do you do? I think it's also, to flip it on its head though as well, why does Mesut Ozil want Arsene Wenger to stay? Is it because he feels that Wenger puts less pressure on him, perhaps, and asks less of him than another manager would want?
Well, I'll flip that on the head then. Mesut Ozil was at the peak of his career. Clearly, he wants to win trophies. He's not playing just for fun. He wants to win trophies. He clearly thinks Arsene Wenger is the man to help him achieve his ambitions.
But I mean, look, I've said for years I'd never understand the Arsene out sentiment. I just think...
Is that just fans, God bless them, wanting a new toy?
I think to a degree, yeah. I'm sure some of them have got... look, there are 60-odd thousand people go to the Emirates every time Arsenal have got a home game, so I'm sure there are a great number of them feel that there are significant reasons why Arsene Wenger should leave the club. Mm. I'm sure a lot of them in the number that... Is it, what do we think, 40% was
think
the terms bandied around? 40% of home fans would like to...
It's an awful lot of ungrateful people, isn't it?
Emirates Stadium. I think inside Emirates Stadium, the percentage is higher. I think there's a lot of people that... The armchair fans, they're quite vocal. But everyone is entitled to their opinion.
They are, absolutely.
If you support a team, you're entitled to your opinion. I happen to disagree fundamentally with most of what the Wenger out brigade say. And I don't like the way that a lot of them go about raising their concerns. I just think get behind the team. I think, to be perfectly honest, the players have a responsibility, as does the manager, to deliver this season. But the fans can play their part. I would like to see less division among the fans, because every time Arsenal have a bad result, it is magnified so much more by the vocal masses that just want change, and I don't think it's helpful.
Adrian, I've had this conversation a few times as well about who Arsenal get in to replace Arsene Wenger. Let's say he does walk away.
Eddie Howe's the one everyone's talking about.
What has Eddie Howe done, apart from playing nice football, as Arsene Wenger does, what has Eddie Howe done to earn that job? Now, Arsenal fans want someone who is going to come in and win something straight away. They said to Wenger, you need to win something. He won them the FA Cup, and they said, oh, we need something more than the FA Cup. So they need to appoint a manager who is going to come in and win the title. Because Wenger's been second, he's been third. It's someone who has to come in and do that. You don't know.
I totally get where you're coming from, but you don't know. I mean, Eddie Howe's managing Bournemouth. They're never going to win the title with Bournemouth. He did get promoted a few times.
I'm not trying to belittle Eddie Howe's
achievements. Pochettino hadn't done a lot prospect. Before he went to Southampton.
Absolutely right. But again, we know he's a very good manager, but he's still yet to win that major silverware. And Arsenal are saying, we want someone who's going to come in and win the league, win the Premier League. It is an incredibly tough task.
Arsenal are at Swansea.
Yes.
At the weekend. Paul Clement. Yeah. Failed at Derby, a club you know well, Tom. Good appointment or
not? Well, failed. He didn't succeed at Derby. I think the jury's out on failure because he sort of had the carpet pulled from beneath his feet to some extent. Yeah. But he didn't play the Derby way.
Didn't play the Derby way.
What way is that, Tom?
Well, do you know what? It's the way Steve McLaren plays football. I say that sort of tongue-in-cheek, but it is a little bit, because if you think back, that was the last time Derby were successful-ish, was when Steve McLaren was there. You know, reached the playoffs, should have gone up. Steve got his tactics wrong, I'm afraid to say, against QPR in the playoff final. And then he had... The year Steve McLaren left, managed to turn this into a Derby question. It's a fallacy to say that the Newcastle job situation on its own caused Derby not to go up that season, because he had an awful amount of injuries to deal with as well, which proved costly. But there was that period in between. And to go back to Paul Clement, you're absolutely right. He did have the rug pulled from underneath him. I think there were things going on behind the scenes that both he wasn't happy with, the club weren't happy with as well.
Mm. But risky appointment,
isn't
it?
There were only 5 points, I think, off top spot. It'd have been a better appointment for me at the start of the season and had the whole season to work
risky for him.
At this stage.
Risky for him. and his reputation, because he's got a very average squad, particularly he's got very poor defenders to work with.
And if he loses, you enter to Chelsea.
And it's massively risky for Swansea because look, he's a coach. He's not a proven manager as yet. So I'm surprised they went for him.
Do you think they'll bring players in? You know, he's been linked with Badstuber, hasn't he?
Yeah,
Which seems a bit ambitious to me.
Are we linking somebody who's worked with Bayern Munich with a Bayern Munich player? look, he's obviously got great contacts, Paul Clement, in the game. You know, you don't work for Chelsea, Real Madrid, Paris Saint-Germain, Bayern Munich and not have some quality contacts. So he might just think that Badstuber would say to him, look, I'll come and give you 6 months in the Premier League and show other Premier League clubs what I can do to put himself in the market.
If he doesn't buy a centre-back, Swansea are down.
Yeah.
Doomed. Fernandes and
Amat. Three or four he's going to bring in.
Fernandes and Amat are two of the worst Premier League defenders I've seen. Mawson's got potential, but he's still raw. And Van der Hoorn, I'm not sold on him.
Okay. I think Tom Carroll will... I think that potentially will get done as well, but they're still waiting to see whether that's a loan.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about him leaving Tottenham.
Yeah.
There's a deal in place,
£4 million. Swansea can buy Tom Carroll for £4 million if they decide to push the button, but I know there's been a lot of back and forth on it.
OK, talking about back and forth, it's happening. There's a lot of that going on at West Ham at the moment. Is Slaven Bilic vulnerable?
Yes, because his players aren't responding to him, are they? We saw a good reaction for the game at Swansea, didn't we? That was a 4-1 win. But since then, three quite poor performances. And I'm just looking at his body language. He just doesn't look anywhere near as confident as he did last year. He doesn't seem to be able to inspire in the same way. And he needs results quickly to stay in a job. But if he gets that, then his recruitment's got to be spot on. They desperately need a striker that is busy, a little bit quick, that can make goals for themselves, that can run onto passes.
Jermaine Defoe, by the sound.
The only way you feel West Ham are going to score at the moment is if they hoist a ball into the box for Antonio or Carroll. They are not creating anything. They've had more long shots, apart from some of the big boys, than anybody else in the league. That they're wasting so many attacks because they've got no striker that they have faith in to slip little passes into the
box.
Looks
like they might be signing Scott Hogan from Brentford for about £12 million later in the week.
Yeah.
Knows the way to goal, you know, that sort of transfer.
In the championship, he knows the way to goal. I think they're
bit of a gamble, that, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit of a gamble. I mean, Brentford now know that they would like Jerome Sinclair from Watford on loan. Okay. So I think that will free up Scott Hogan to go to West Ham.
Is Matt Zari vulnerable there as well?
I think he is. Yeah, I really do think he is. There's always one club, isn't there, that drops like a stone in the second half of the season and gets sucked into that relegation battle. And then, unless Matt Zari gets it sorted out pretty quickly at Watford, then he could be in trouble.
Michael Cox asks, can Tottenham get into the top four?
Definitely, yeah. Tottenham are a quality side.
Who's missing out here, by the way? Because you've got Arsenal and Tottenham both in the top four.
Well, I'm not... Who's missing out?
And this is what's going to make the end of the season so fascinating.
I couldn't tell you. Honestly, I think any of the top six could miss out. Even Chelsea at this point. I wouldn't write off anybody out.
Really?
I wouldn't write off anybody. I think it's an open race. That's why I think the FA Cup could be so important for certain managers as well this season. It could save a season for potentially one of the sides that doesn't make the top four. Spurs are a quality outfit. They're powerful. They've got one of the best managers in Europe, clearly. Pochettino hasn't got the same silverware as your Contes, your Klopps, your Guardiola's, Mourinho's, but I think he's at the same level as all of the top five managers, to be perfectly honest. And for that reason, providing they stay clear of injuries, Tottenham have got a shot, as good a shot as anybody else in the top six of making top four or even pushing for the title. If they get injury Spurs, no chance, they will drop out.
Yeah, we've been asked quite regularly on here about Tottenham, and all the questions go back to the business principles of Daniel Levy. Are Tottenham's major players vulnerable to big offers from, say, the likes of Real Madrid because Tottenham cash in? Moussa Dembele's being talked about, maybe going to Spain.
He really is a beast of a player as well, an absolute quality player for me, Dembele. I think it's a little bit unfair to say that only Tottenham's players are at risk because, look, Liverpool, huge club. But if Real Madrid or Barcelona come in for Philippe Coutinho, they're going to have, I'm not saying he would leave, but they're going to have a job on convincing a South American not to go.
But Tottenham's wage salary cap is prohibitive, isn't it? Liverpool will pay higher wages, won't they? Tottenham pay the lowest wages, right, out of the top six. I think that's fact. Okay, so that's got to make them more vulnerable to the predators. Because, as we've seen so many times, if a top player gets offered 250 grand a week to go and play for someone else, they're going to be interested. They're lucky that Harry Kane, in many respects, is such a Tottenham lad and that he's got his head screwed on and he wants to become a Spurs legend, because a lot of players of his ability might have jumped ship.
Let's play fantasy football. Dele Alli. He came in at $5 million.
Yeah.
He was worth $25 million in the summer. He's now worth 50, 60, 70. How much would he be worth on the open market?
I mean, it's a good question. I mean, you're absolutely right. You're playing fantasy chairman at that, aren't you? I mean, if you're Daniel Levy, I think you're looking at that and saying, look, we're talking the sort of figures that we saw Gareth Bale move for. You know, we're talking...
Would you have said this six games ago?
Yeah, I would, because, look, he had such a good last season and we saw him do so many wonderful things that we know the talent's there. Yeah. We know he was carrying a little bit of an injury. We know there's been a hangover from everything that went on with England in the summer. So, yeah, I would have done. Now, had he had a whole season where he wasn't quite up to it, then you'd perhaps think again. But he hasn't. He's proved himself. He's proved himself.
At his age, Dele Alli is producing amazing quality football. I really do think so. Most players his age are just breaking into a first team. That they're shining for the under 21s. You know, this is a guy that scored got to double figures already in the Premier League. He's completely
20 goals in 50 games. Completely, not many people have done that.
Completely at home in a top six Premier League side. He's a class act. He's going to be some player. He is going to push the likes of Frank Lampard in terms of being the highest scoring English midfielder. No doubt about it.
And I think he will at some point end up abroad. I think there is a desire from the player. I'm not saying now, I'm not saying in 2 or 3 years, but, you know, maybe 5 years there is
a desire.
He told
Steve Bruce on Sunday he'd like to play for Aston Villa.
apparently so.
Manchester City, we're getting towards the end of the podcast now. Yeah. Look at them. They're playing Everton on Sunday. I just get the feeling something's missing there.
That for something is good defensive work, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, look, they don't have a good keeper. It comes from confidence comes from your keeper, and they have the worst keeper in the top six, hands down. I mean, he's a bit of a liability. Actually, Liverpool will be pushing them close. I don't think Mignolet is a lot more convincing. But it is more about Guardiola's work off the ball. How much is he going to concentrate on that between now and the end of the season? Arsene Wenger's been criticised down the years for worrying too much about how Arsenal play on the ball, how they attack, neglecting the defence to some degree. Guardiola, I think, has neglected his defence in terms of his recruitment and in identifying the problems City have faced. And they've just not learned from their mistakes. They continue to lose the ball cheaply inside their own defensive third. They continue to be beaten by headers inside the box. They continue to be quite easy to get at. What's he going to do about it, Guardiola? If he doesn't do something quickly, I actually think you asked me who's going to miss out of the top four. I would stick my neck on the line and say City, because they have the worst defence of the lot.
It'd be the climb down of all climb downs, but I'd be exploring whether there was any recall clause in Joe Hart's loan, because that could well be the difference for City. I mean,
could you see them outside the top four or not?
Yeah, I wouldn't rule it out. I'd be very surprised. I'd be very, very surprised. I mean, I was at West Ham on Friday night. And,
yeah, they were excellent.
It was almost like a pre-season game. They were superb. And Toure looks like he's, you know, fit again and hungry again, which he clearly had lost a little bit of that at the start of the season. But I would love to know Pep Guardiola's thoughts. I don't think he'd ever admit it publicly, but I'd love to know privately whether he felt that having had 6 months or a year, whatever he had, to sit and prepare for Manchester City and the Premier League, whether he now thinks to himself, I made a mistake with Joe Hart, I should have kept him, I should have kept someone with that experience just for 1 year and ease this whole Bravo or whoever it was going to be, ease them in behind the scenes and get the team in training used to playing that way rather than getting them and trying to do it straight in the league.
OK, final question to bring everything around full circle, really. Chelsea, can you see anyone catching them?
Yes, I think Liverpool have got a chance. I think Manchester United, bizarrely, have got a chance. I think they're just mounting, getting momentum at the right time, and if they can keep that going. Look, we've seen Chelsea have shown that you need runs. They've proved that a run of 13 victories gives them, a gap, but it's still only, 4 or 5 points right up the top, 10 points over United. So if United can keep that momentum that they've built going, then they're in with a shout. But I think Liverpool, Manchester City and Manchester United are the only ones that would catch them.
Every top six team has flaws. There is no perfect team in this season's Premier League. It's wide open, completely wide open. Any of the top six could win the title. Any of them could finish sixth, in my view.
Well, I can't see him being stopped. The Empire has struck back. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.